Welcome to Inside Albania with me, Alice Taylor. Today I am not in the studio and I am speaking to you from the Vjosa Narsa Delta protected area in the south of Albania, approximately a 2 and a bit hour drive from the capital of Tirana. Now this region comprises of salt pans, you can see here, a vast lagoon just behind where the camera is, and over here we even have forests. Now this environment is crucial for local and migratory birds, for various other types of wildlife and for nature in general. However, it's currently under threat by the construction of a new airport. Now local environmentalists are very concerned that this construction, this new airport, when functional, will pose a big risk to birds and other animals in the local area, particularly migratory birds, which will be encountering birds of a very different size when they're trying to take off and land. So to find out a bit more about this entire situation and exactly what is at stake, I decided to come to the lagoon today with Jerry from local environmental organisation PP NEA to find out exactly what's going on. Come with me. Jerry, thank you so much for bringing me here today. I've driven past this a million times, but I had no idea how, well, hot and beautiful it is. But for people who aren't here to experience this for themselves, what makes this area so important, so special? What species are there? How big is it? Tell me the facts.
Well, thank you, first of all, for joining one of my expeditions at monitoring the Vjosa Narda protected area. Well, up to now, we have seen at least 10 different species in this first journey. I am very sure and convinced that in the next meter, we'll see other species. And this is what makes Vjosa Narda protected landscape important area, because have a diverse habitat, species, and since it's important wetlands, have a very diverse and important water bird species. It's important to emphasize that this area, besides being protected in a national level, it's also proclaimed as an important bird area, a key biodiversity area, part of Emerald Network as a candidate site, and have also the potential to become Ramsar sites. This, all these sites, all these names that I mentioned makes this area very important, not only in national level, but also in international level.
Now, you mentioned in the car on the way here, this site spans, I think it was around 19,000 hectares, you said. And, you know, we've been here for 20 minutes now, and we've seen all these different types of birds, flamingos, terns.
Owlsets, terns.
All sorts of different. What is the importance of these birds? You mentioned some are local, some are migratory, so they don't even really belong to Albania, they're just passing through. But can you give us a rundown of some of the other species which are maybe endangered or particularly important?
Yeah. Well, as I was telling you before, Vjosa Narda protected landscape is on the Adriatic flyway or the corridor, the migration corridor that bird species use, rather from Africa to Albania, or rather from the northern side to Albania during wintering season. And it's a hotspot for all these birds. It's a good place for breeding ground, but also for wintering grounds during wintering time. And we can see a diverse bird species. Until now, we might say that we have seen two important or two species, which here we can find in the large numbers. I would say that more than 1% of the population that is found in Europe for the species, for example, as flamingos that we see. And in front of us, we have the pied avocet, which here we both species we find more than 1%. It's found here in Narda. But rather, like a few meters there, we might see also the Dalmatian pelican, which is an important species. Even though it's breeding in Divjaka Caravasa National Park, he's feeding in Vjosa Narda protected area.
So all these different species are either living in Albania or they are traveling over Albania. They're stopping here to eat, to breed, to nest, to relax for a bit, and then they're moving on. So this is really like a central hub of bird activity in Europe.
Yeah, yeah, that is true. It's one of the most important wetlands in Mediterranean. And this is one of the arguments that we are using also for the preservation of the area against the construction of the airport within the protected area. Because, as I mentioned you also before, we have seen this ringed species from France, from Turkey, and from Bulgaria, and from other countries. This, this makes this area important not only in the national level, but also in the international level, which hosts species from around the world. And these species need to be protected.
So yeah, we have a duty to protect it, not just for our own Albanian birds, but for those that belong essentially to other countries as well.
Yeah, yeah. This is why we need to protect the migratory bird species and, of course, their habitat that they are using, rather for breeding or roosting or feeding and so on.
So, I mean, it's hard for me to imagine, you know, big planes flying overhead, but what exactly, what risk is there to the wildlife here if we have a fully functional airport just over here? You know, what is going to happen to these birds?
Well, it's important to highlight that according to the measurement that I have done before arriving here, the airport with the salinas, with the breeding grounds, are only like 200 to 400 meters. This is first, and which will be a huge damage during the breeding season, for example. But it's not only that. What we fear most is also the collision with birds. It's important to highlight that the Divjaka Caravasta National Park and the Ostanada Protected Landscape have the same ecosystem. We might say that they are the same ecosystem, and we are seeing that the birds rather go to feed in Divjaka or in Narta also, and they move vice versa. So, and the airport is in the middle. So the this like cut in the middle of both areas would cause not only the fragmentation of the areas, but also could cause collision of the airplanes.
So it's going to basically split up this very important vast habitat. It's going to scare away birds. It's going to stop them from coming here, breeding here, eating here. And then there's the risk of actual death of them colliding with airplanes. And I guess this could potentially be a risk for the planes as well. I can't imagine flying into a flock of birds is going to be particularly great for the plane or the people on it.
Yeah, yeah, and we are talking here about safety, safety of people, not only the economic aspects, which they need to maintain the airplanes, but also the safety of people. Additionally, it's important to highlight that the area it's a potentially area to be flooded in the following years. Up till now, every year this area, this the airport site close by to this pond, it's flooded every year. So it doesn't make a lot of sense that you build an airport in a non-sustainable or not sustainable area. Yeah.
Especially with climate change, Albania is very susceptible to it. I mean, I'm feeling it now, you know.
Yeah. And according to the projections, according to a study that some researchers have done, the exact area will be like flooded quite too much during like in the next 10 years.
How many flamingos are there normally in this area, do you estimate?
Well, according to our estimation, daily we can find 2,000 to 3,000, even more sometimes.
And pelicans?
And pelicans? We can see it over there, one.
I'm half blind, so with my binoculars.
It's, you know, you can see the big bird flying, the white big bird. Now he's going to land a bit. We do regularly yearly pelican census. And this year we have a count around 40 individuals of pelicans.
See, they do a pelican census, but the Albanian government still hasn't managed to do a human census for the last few years.
Yeah, the pelican is the biggest.
How big are they?
Birds. They can go up to three meters.
It's bigger than me. So, what other animals are in this area, apart from birds, that could potentially be impacted by this airport?
Yeah, yeah. It's important to highlight that the lagoon or Vjosenarda protected landscape is not only home to birds, mm-hmm. but it's home also to reptilians, amphibians, mammals. Mm-hmm. According to our studies, here we can find two important mammal species that are listed in as protected, but also yeah. in the international convention annexes, such as the golden jackal or the otter, also mm-hmm. which are present on the area. It's important also to highlight the sea turtles also, which the government is making studies.
Yes.
On the shore, we can find the Carreta carreta, which is an endangered species. Additional species, we can find here also the different types of bats, which also they could be affected due to the acoustic...
the loud sound of the planes.
Yes. Yes. The sound pollution and the light pollution. So all these species that I mentioned could be infected like during their breeding or in every type of year.
So your organization has challenged the Albanian government over the construction of this airport. I believe in the first instance it was rejected over a technicality to do with wording. What's the status of this legal challenge now? And what exactly are you fighting? What's the basis of it?
So as you know, PPNEA, together with AOS and the help of international NGOs, we are suing the Albanian government in two court cases. One is for the environmental impact assessment, the other is for the revision of the protected area. Both court cases for the environmental impact assessment and the revision of protected area, now we are ongoing, and we are waiting also for the additional studies that we are already doing to present to the court facts that this area or the habitat that the airport is constructing have done a huge damage to the Vjosenarda protected landscape. And we are sure that with the operation phase, this damage will be quite immense mm-hmm. On the wildlife.
But, I mean, there is an argument, you know, Albania this year at least, I think we're nearly 50-60% more tourists than before. It is difficult to get from Tirana down to the south. It's sort of 2-4 hour drive. Albania wants to focus on tourism. It needs another airport. Where? I'm not quite sure, but I do think it does need one. What's your solution to this situation? What's the ideal outcome for you?
Yeah, well, not necessarily it needs an airport. There are other ways of transportation which experts have suggested to Albania, but also suggested in general, such as, for example, the railway, mm-hmm. Which I would like to emphasize, which the expert contacted from the Bern Convention, he did an assessment. And one of the suggestions or the recommendation done was the construction of an airport like 2 hours far from Tirana. It doesn't make any sense, but probably a railway could make more sense for it.
Or even if there is going to be an airport, maybe perhaps not putting it in the middle of a protected area.
Of course.
Would be a good idea.
And this is also to emphasize that there were four alternatives mm-hmm. before arriving in this situation. And three other alternatives, or at least two other alternatives, were outside of protected areas, quite far, in front of our... in these hills, mm-hmm. right after the hills, which were outside of a protected area and very close to Vlora city. Probably much better to this site, but yeah.
So you're going to keep fighting, and what do you want? A stop to the construction there and a reconsideration of whether there needs to be an airport or whether there's another solution?
Yeah, what we are aiming is to stop the construction of the airport in this phase, because they already have done a huge huge damage to the habitat in the surrounding, and consider another alternative if they would like to proceed with this airport as a solution for the transportation.
I mean, imagine now some huge jet coming sort of right over the top of us now.
It's crazy because like there are huge flocks of with flamingos or pelicans, mm-hmm. which go directly to the Viaca Caravasta. And can you imagine, for example, how they will interact with an airport or with a jet? Like most of the collision are done with by small birds, mm-hmm. but can you imagine a Dalmatian pelican, like 3 meters wingspan? It's a huge 15 bird.
15 kilos, and obviously when it's moving and the plane's moving, there's more. I'm not very good at physics, but there's more weight involved in that, you know. So it's disastrous.
It's a major problem. And flamingos, for example, they fly in flocks like 300, 400, or even more.
Someone didn't think this through, did they?
Well, craziness.
So I've been talking about the Vjosa Nata Lagoon, and many of you may have heard the word Vjosa before, because several years ago there was a very big campaign in Albania that started to protect the Vjosa River and to have it designated as a national park. Now, this campaign caught the attention of international organisations and big celebrities such as Leonardo DiCaprio. And the campaign that followed was international, drawing attention to the importance of the Vjosa River. Now, 2 years ago, I interviewed the CEO of international brand Patagonia about their push and their desire to have the entire Vjosa designated as a wild river park. Now, at the time, the CEO, Ryan Gellert, was not hopeful that this would ever become a reality. But as of this year, the entire Vjosa has been designated as such, which gives hope to civil society and environmental campaigns everywhere, and also a glimmer of hope to the people fighting against this airport. I interviewed Ryan Gellert on how we got where we are today with the Vjosa National Park and what lies ahead in the future. So Ryan, we spoke back in 2021 while the campaign for the Vjosa Wild River National Park was in full swing. Now, at the time, I think it was safe to say we were not overly optimistic that our wish was going to be granted. There were mixed signals about how and to what level it would be protected. And in the interview, you said there were no sound bites that make me confident we're going in the same direction in reference to the government. Now, in 2023, the Vjosa is a national park. This is great news. Work is underway. What happened? How did you change the mind of the Albanian government?
Yeah, well, first of all, thanks for having me back. It's really wonderful to be back and pick up this conversation where we left it a couple of years ago. Seems like 10, 20 years ago since we were operating in that situation that you described. But, you know, I guess what I would be careful to say first off is I'm not sure we entirely changed the minds of the government. I think that what we were able to do collectively is come together and have a conversation free of agenda, pretty open, pretty direct, pretty transparent about what were the interests of all the different parties. And so I give Prime Minister Rama a lot of credit for initiating that conversation. It was one that all of us involved in the Save the Blue Heart of Europe campaign had been pushing to have. He was very receptive to that. And perhaps more importantly, I think he was surprisingly aligned, surprising to us at least, that, you know, protecting the Vjosa was something he was more than open to. He was really passionate about. And so I think in that conversation, from memory, I believe was in November 2021. And for the last 2 years or less than 2 years since, it's been a sprint and a sprint that has had us working to understand what it would mean to protect the Vjosa River and its major tributaries, and then ultimately putting in place the initial steps to do that.
Great. Now, in my view, the whole campaign for the Vjosa Wild River National Park is an incredible example of what we can achieve when we work together. So that's local organizations, international organizations, civil society, business, media, public figures, and politicians, which don't always work so well together. And then, of course, you have the scientists, legal experts, and regular citizens. Can you talk to me a bit about your experience with this process, the pitfalls, the lessons learned from working on such a collaborative mission?
Yeah, I'm really glad you framed it that way, because when I step back and think about this whole project, I think that really is kind of the biggest idea, is can all these different and at times groups that have different agendas and different sort of perspectives on something come together, find the common ground, work through disagreements, because inevitably they're going to be there, and create a, a platform, a working group, and a coalition to do large-scale landscape-level conservation. And I think that's the biggest idea. And I think my hope is that the legacy of this project will be that, yes, that can happen. Here's a model for that happening, and that we're able to replicate this, not just for conservation, and certainly not just for conservation of rivers, but for conservation, for restoration. And I think that you listed a large group of stakeholders that I think are critical to this. And I would just repeat them all. I think it's absolutely foundational. You've got civil society in all its different dimensions. You've got government, you've got business. I represent business. I think what we can bring are resources. In our case, we can bring some experience and expertise, but what we can also bring is just kind of a spirit of collaboration. And I think that that's, you know, perhaps a unique role of business. I find myself talking to business leaders in a bunch of different industries from different parts of the world all the time, many of whom are saying, look, this is something we want to engage in, but we don't know how. And I think that, again, part of the opportunity here with this project is building a little bit of a blueprint of how all of these stakeholders, including business, can come together and do that. You know, I will add quickly, if I make any of this sound simple, it's not, in that there's disagreement, you know, daily, if not weekly. And I think the big idea here is figuring out how we can all stay really focused on the ultimate goal and understand each other and navigate through the different complexities that happen along the way.
So also I want to say the establishment of this park, I mean, it's a huge milestone. It's a very significant milestone for Albania and environmental conservation in the country. Just quickly, for those who maybe aren't so familiar as you or I, what are the immediate and long-term goals of the national park? And is Patagonia's work done, or are you going to have sort of a hands-on role in this?
Yeah, I think, you know, we've moved from the first phase was after sort of coming together and aligning on the ambition for all of this. The first phase, which was about 6 months in length, was a feasibility report. And that was really defining collectively, can this be done? And we've moved past that phase now. And what we're collaborating on the creation of is an integrated management plan. And that is, how will this be done? So that's a tremendous amount of fine detail. But the big, you know, where do the signs go and where does the visitor center go and how do we integrate with local communities? I think the big foundational pieces and the areas of focus right now are legal structure, financing. Ultimately, the biggest and most permanent, it's sort of the never-ending piece that's absolutely critical for the future of this project, is integration with local communities. When you have local communities that take pride in this national park and take responsibility for protecting it, then I think you've got true sustainability. So that's kind of what we're all working towards. And then to your question about Patagonia's ongoing role in this, we're absolutely invested in it in every way. We put our time into it, we put our money into it, we put our brands behind it, and we'll continue to be as long as we're additive to the process.
Which brings me on to my next question. So, I mean, this whole campaign and this positive outcome has undoubtedly inspired many other people, individuals, organizations to take action for environmental conservation. But what advice would you give to those who are passionate about preserving natural resources and ecosystems, but maybe they feel overwhelmed, they don't know where to begin, they don't think they have a chance at sort of realizing it? What would you say to them?
Well, I would say first that feeling of being overwhelmed by the size and the scale of the climate and ecological crisis is one that really resonates with me. I mean, I think the news that we all consume and the lived experiences that we all share, pretty much regardless of where you live in the world, is one of the degrading health of our planet and its natural systems. We're closing out the month of July, and globally, this will go down as the hottest month in the last 100,000 years in recorded history for humanity. And I can virtually guarantee that that'll be topped next month or next year or sometime in the not too distant future. And so that's what we're living with. I think that what's really critical is a couple of things that I think are foundationally important. First of all, I start with a statement that Yvon Chouinard, our founder, says often. It's kind of fueled us through a lot of the work that we've done over our 50-year history, and that is, the cure for depression is action. So just figure out how you can do something and start moving forward. I think that people often misunderstand, think that they either have to be a scientist, they have to be an activist, they have to be a conservationist. I think there's a lot of ways that you can contribute to this. I think one of the best sort of exercises to think about is, where is the need? What am I good at? And what gives me joy? And where is the intersection of those three things? And I think that third piece is often is an overlooked and misunderstood piece. But I think if you don't have joy for the work that you're doing, I think that it's very difficult to sustain the energy behind it. So I think that's a critical piece. And I think when people ask themselves that, sometimes it takes a little bit of introspection and thinking. I think you'll find that there are absolutely compelling and unique ways that you can contribute to saving our home planet.
If we were to repeat this interview in 2 years from now, where do you expect us to be in terms of the vision for the Vuosa River? And what do you anticipate are the biggest sort of immediate hurdles we need to overcome?
I would hope and expect that the people who have invested so much of their time, their energy, and their political capital, the founders of the Save the Blue Heart of Europe campaign, Prime Minister Rama, Minister Kumbaro, I think really being recognized beyond Albania, but across Europe and perhaps even globally for the leading work that they've contributed to as we work to create a model for landscape conservation and restoration. And that we're able to take this model and replicate it around different geographies, around different fragile landscapes. I think those are some of the things that I fully expect we'll be able to realize in the next couple of years.
And this is really key, isn't it? It's not just, you know, that we're protecting the Vuosa, which is extremely important for the region and one of the last wild rivers in Europe, but it's what you said there, that this is a model which is new, it's unique, that can be then applied to other areas. So this is great for Albania. We're leading the way here.
Yeah, and I think I love the idea that a country that's often overlooked is the one that is showing the rest of Europe and showing much of the world of what's possible and how to do it. So I love that about it. I admire the ambition, and I really, really appreciate the commitment and the hard work that the Albanian government, working in partnership with NGOs and we as a private business, have demonstrated.
If you had your sort of elevator pitch, if you like, about what the Vuosa River and this national park means to you, what would it be?
I think it's a spirit of what's possible. It's a spirit of collaboration. It's a spirit of hope. It's a spirit of possibility. And I think it's, I just love this idea. And it really fuels me, even if it seems a little bit perverse at times, which is the reward for solving a problem is almost always in life an invitation to a bigger problem. And, I think if you orient to that, if you're not surprised by that, but if you wake up every day knowing that that's what you get for solving a problem is you get a bigger problem. I think it's really freeing when you can embrace that. And I think that this project, when I think back personally to the early days of, God, this is one of the most amazing, pristine rivers in the world. What would it be like to protect it? And what are the opportunities for collaboration? Everything seemed out of reach. And to look at it just a couple of years later, I think it's been about 7 years since my first visit to Albania, and see where we are and see what's in front of us, to know what's possible, I think is an incredible, I find it really inspiring. And I look forward to being a part of sharing that story and that story continuing to progress and be a more distilled proof point of what's possible in landscape level conservation via collaboration. That's what fuels me. That's what gets me excited.
Now, my last question is slightly off script, but I have to ask it because people in Albania love nothing more than to hear what people think of their country. You've been to Albania several times. What do you like about this country? What makes it special? What are your thoughts about it?
I think it's one of the most, for context, I've lived and worked in Europe. I've lived and worked in Asia. I'm an American who now lives and works primarily in the U.S. I've been very fortunate to travel around the world extensively and through mostly rock climbing, but also some backcountry snowboarding. I've just been in a lot of wild places all around the world. I think Albania is one of the most beautiful places I've ever been. It's got this this natural beauty, and I think for a variety of reasons, historical, culture, and otherwise, it's had a real light touch from the hand of humans in many areas and many ways. And I think that makes it really unique and really worth taking the time to ask themselves, Albanians, this is not my space to do it, how do we want to move into the future, and what do we want to be our legacy as it relates to this natural landscape that is in the shape that it is, which is very unique when you compare it to the rest of Europe, which is why the Vjosa truly is one of the last free-flowing and wild rivers in all of Europe. And so I just find it to be a land of possibility. I find it to be a land of unparalleled beauty. And I do find the optimism and the commitment and the willingness and the creativity and in finding solutions from the people that we've had the opportunity to work with just really unique. So I look forward to getting back to Albania. I hope that's by the end of the year. And I really look forward to playing some small role in the establishment of the Vjosa Wild River National Park.
Thank you very much for joining me this week on Inside Albania. Don't forget, you can tune in every Saturday at 4:30. You can also watch on the Euronews Albania YouTube channel or across all major podcasting platforms. Until next time, Miro Pashim from Vlora.